Nice to be back with all of you again. Hold on, maybe tomorrow. I've been here in Atlanta for about a week now. I'd like to speak something about Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, and I hope I'll get to it. The other topic I'd like to speak about, which is the relationship between Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. I'll start with that. Srila Prabhupada tried that Bhagavad Gita is our undergraduate study. It's the ABCs. Undergraduate study. And Srimad Bhagavatam is our graduate study. So normally you do all your undergraduate studies before you do your graduate studies. But Prabhupada made it so nice that he gave us both. In our temples, he gave us Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, even before he gave us Bhagavad Gita. And then he gave us Bhagavad Gita and he continued the program where every morning we would have class in Srimad Bhagavatam and every evening we'd have class in Bhagavad Gita combined, just as we have now done our teen kirtan. And of course, prasada. But some class in the morning, Bhagavad Gita class every evening. Prabhupada called that a Krishna conscious sandwich. During the day is what goes in the middle, and then morning and evening with kirtan and deity worship. So, what it means that everything that's in Srimad Bhagavatam is presented in its very simple, very approachable form in Bhagavad Gita. So in one sense, everything you need to know is in Bhagavad Gita. At the same time, Srimad Bhagavatam is postgraduate, not so much in the sense that it's more you have to be an intellectual or a cerebral person or something like that to appreciate it. It's very, in fact, a very title. Srimad Bhagavatam means it's very beautiful. One can be very scholarly at all and just hear the beautiful narrations found in Srimad Bhagavatam and become attracted to Krishna. And one who becomes attracted to Krishna, it's the greatest treasure of life, because you become attracted to Krishna and that can carry you beyond material existence, beyond the cycle of birth and death and into the spiritual realm just by becoming attracted to Krishna. So, how Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam compare is something of a comparison between Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam, because Srimad Bhagavatam is part of, Bhagavad Gita is part of Mahabharata, right? Correct? Mahabharata is a big epic, and in the middle of the big epic is this philosophical portion called Bhagavad Gita. But the rest of Mahabharata is massive presentation on the history of Greater India and the kings, particularly the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And in the course of describing that history, we're instructed by Vyasadeva on many points of ethics and morality, how to live your life based upon virtue. And those that are a little familiar with literature, a classic theme is the struggle of good against evil. So many of the modern movies, it's just like, you know, however weird it gets, it's good against evil. What's the latest of the several part series? Everyone's reading from that British author. What's the guy? The main character's name? Oh, come on, help me. Hey, it is. Yeah, Harry Potter. That's it. Struggle of good against evil. Classic theme. So, Mahabharata isn't fiction, it's history of the Kauravas headed by Duryodhana and Dushasana and Shakuni and the rest of the gang, and the Pandavas headed by Yudhishthira, who's none other than Yamaraj himself. We discussed this in Purvis, how he, before Vidura was Yamaraj cursed, and Yudhishthira was the son of Yamaraj, and thus called sometimes Dharmaraj, because he was the emblem of virtue. So, struggle between vice and virtue is a theme, and virtue prevails. It's a very prevalent theme. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, the theme is exclusive devotion to Krishna. From the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's this pronouncement. It's like, you know, a trumpeter is standing at the door. Po, 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 po. Hear ye, hear ye. The subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is not going to have anything to do with material advancement. Boop, 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 boop. So if you're interested in material advancement, don't bother reading anything further. It's not even going to be talked about. There's one subject matter in Srimad Bhagavatam. Approaching the position of unalloyed devotion to the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, who is the absolute truth. From Satyam Dhimahi. That's the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll give a little example, a little sampling, just so you can appreciate. Those of you that have read Mahabharata, please raise your hand when I ask you if you want to volunteer the answer to this question. What happened after Krishna left and the Pandavas left this world? Where did the Pandavas go? What happened? Who knows the answer from Mahabharata? What happened? Yeah. Where did they personally go after that? They went to the witch? No. Not after though everything was over. Kurukshetra battle's over, everything's over. Krishna's leading the planet. Where does the Pandavas go? Vidavid? According to Mahabharata, they had made some mistakes, as everybody makes mistakes, and they had to see hell. Did you know that? Then they went to heaven, because they were primarily highly virtuous, but they made some boo-boos somewhere along the way. So they had to see hell. That's the description in Mahabharata. And the description in Srimad Bhagavatam is, they are unalloyed devotees of Krishna. Meaning, for example, Arjuna was the recipient of the Bhagavad Gita. When the disciplic succession was broken, yoga nashta parantapa, who did Krishna choose to speak Bhagavad Gita to reestablish that line that he had previously given, Vivasvan to Swayambhuva, to Vaivasvata Manu, from Vaivasvata Manu to Ikshvaku, and so on. But when that line of succession was broken, Krishna didn't choose a great sage or a sannyasi or a brahmana. He chose Arjuna. Prabhupada liked to speak about this. Arjuna was a grahastha. He was a politician. He was a kshatriya. He had several wives. He wasn't just, you know, married. He had several wives. He was a king. He was entitled to that. He wasn't, he wasn't in the category of someone you might think, wow, that's a good person to receive transcendental knowledge. But the qualification of Arjuna was, because bhaktosime sikha cheti, because he was a dear devotee and friend of Krishna. So, he's a pure devotee. As Yudhisthira and Bhima, and perfectly virtuous and perfectly pure in devotion. So according to the Bhagavatam, when they received word that Krishna had left, they left. They ascended, as Vedavid said, they ascended into the north country, meaning the Himalayas, and they just left this world in their self-same body. Wow. Their bodies became so spiritualized with spiritual potency, they left this world in their spiritual body. I mean, their self-same body spiritualized. So there's a distinction between the Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam. But Srimad Bhagavad Gita is within that Mahabharata. It's not just about morality. It's sarvadharmam tyaja, mamekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva pāpebhyo mokṣayiṣyāmi mā śuchaḥ. That's the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. All varieties of dharma, they are subordinate. Actually, language is stronger. Pratyaja means abandon, reject. But they're subordinate. Just like here's a nice chandelier, and there are light bulbs in that chandelier. Is that what I don't know? And it's a nice structure, but it's all supported by one piece up at the top. And if that one piece at the top broke, the chandelier would come crashing down, finished. But its beauty and its value is made possible by this one piece that's supporting the whole chandelier. Similarly, there's one principle that's supporting all other principles of dharma. One principle is surrender to Krishna. Full shelter in Krishna. That's the conclusion. All other principles are subordinated to that one principle. That's where Bhagavad Gita ends, and that's where Srimad Bhagavatam begins. Therefore, graduate study. Here's another understanding of the relationship of Srimad Bhagavatam to Bhagavad Gita. We find in Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva had a very special capacity. He could see into the future and into the past perfectly. We can't even see what's in front of us perfectly. But in all places, past, present, and future, Vyasadeva had access to. Trikala Gya. You heard that term? Tri means three. Kala means time. And Gya means to know. J-N-A, Gya. So Trikala Gya. He's knower of past, present, and future. We don't know present perfectly. Vyas knows present perfectly and equally perfectly all things. Can you imagine that you could just like go forward in time and see everything before it happens, and go back in time and see everything that happens? That's like circuit overload even to think about it. So that was Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva looked into the future, because Krishna had just left, was about to leave. So he took up the service. He saw the future and saw Kali Yuga. And what he saw, it's described what he saw, but it was horrible, especially compared to Vedic times. It was literally horrifying. So being a saintly person, when you see something horrific, you have to do something, even if you're not a saintly person. If you see some awful circumstance, you can't just walk by and watch that awful circumstance. Like Prabhupada's example, if you see a blind man heading for the ditch, you have to do something. Excuse me, sir, you're headed for the ditch. Can you come over to the middle of the road? Gently help the blind person come to the middle of the road. At least that. They don't fall in the ditch. So Vyas saw that the blind population of Kali Yuga heading for the ditch. He had to do something. So his capacity was, he's a literary person. Some of us may not be literary persons. Some are good singers. Some are very, very good at decorating deities. Wow, very good at decorating deities. Some are good at landscaping. Some are good at bookkeeping. Some are good at building. Some are good at this and that and the other thing. But whatever, our response should be similar. When we see the blind civilization heading for the ditch, we have to do something. We can't just roll, roll, roll your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. You can't do that. You have to do something. So Vyas did something. And he used what he was gifted. He was a literary person. So he understood, as Kali Yuga progresses, people will not understand the Vedas. They'll be too lazy to approach the Vedas. They'll be too busy with worldly things to even think about it. And their capacity will be diminished, because that's what happens in Kali Yuga. And the situation is so bad, I should make the Vedas accessible to people of the world. So what previously was in sound vibration, Shabda Brahman, there were no books, because people had perfect memory. Can you imagine going to school and just hear the teacher once? You know, you learn everything. Not bad, huh? But this is Kali Yuga. It's not like that in Kali Yuga. You have to study books. You hear it so many times and sit in your desk and... Right? And then, you know, you can get the answer. But before Kali Yuga, persons could hear something once. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had that capacity. Because he's a Ray Vishnu. He's a Vaikuntha person. He would read libraries. And later he would recite verbatim. You know, we need computers and we can go search up something on computers and then, you know, find that information on a computer. But he was a walking computer. He was a walking encyclopedia. Press a button. And he could, you know, he would recite. At one point, Bhaktisiddhanta was in college. And then he realized, what am I going to do with this college education anyway? And if I continue with my college education, the expectation will be that I'll get married. And I have no interest in that. So he didn't finish college, and he accepted the post of librarian of the king of Mithnapur. So as a librarian, he read the whole library. And then he memorized the whole library just by reading it. And then later in his writings, he would quote European authors, Chaucer and Milton and this one and that one, and, you know, word for word. What an amazing capacity. And so Vyas, understanding that people in the age of Kali, you know, speaking, don't have that capacity, so he wrote everything down that was previously just by sound. And when he wrote it down, he also divided it. And that's where his name comes. Veda, Vyasa. Vyasa means he divided. He divided the Vedas into four. It was originally just one Veda, but to make it approachable, four. And then divisions amongst those four. of the philosophical portion and how you perform the yajna and the particular meter and the pronunciation and so on. It's all within each of the four Vedas. Then he wanted to summarize all of those Vedas, so he wrote Vedanta Sutra, which is in little codes the essence of all the Vedas. Then he wanted to explain Vedanta Sutra, so he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Puranas or Smriti to explain the Shruti. So he did this huge task. Huge task. And then he sat, and within that composition was Mahabharata, of which one part is Bhagavad Gita. He composed all of that. And just like an artist, well, I can say somebody that dresses, in your home you may have deities or pujaris, after they dress the deities. They're outside looking at the deity, how did it come out? Or the cook the feast. They want to taste the preparation to see how it came out. Of course, after it's offered to Krishna, but after you do something, you know, some service, something creative, or some service for Krishna, you want to appraise, to evaluate. You put on a Rathyatra, and you have a session after Rathyatra, how did it come out? What things went well? What things can be improved upon? It's just standard. So Vyasa did like that. He compiled all the Vedas. He sat back and thought about all that he had just compiled. And he felt this pinch in his heart. Like the pinch of something's not right. And my dear devotees, we all know what that feeling is. As earnestly as you may try to do something, all too often there's this thing inside that says, something's right. If we're a little sensitive and not proud, we'll feel it. We'll pick up on that signal. Something's not right. Even with, you know, a good attempt, but something's not right. So as he was feeling like that, Narada came, his spiritual master. Off in the forest by the river Saraswati, in his little cottage, and Vyasa was feeling like this, and Narada came. And Narada came and asked him, my dear Vyasa, you don't look so good. why are you looking like this? And he gave all the positive things and said, this is good, and that's good, and that's good, and that's good, and so, why are you looking this way? And Vyasa said, I don't know. But you're in touch with Super Soul. So you must know. Can you tell me wrong? Why am I feeling despondent? Narada said, oh, do you need to say that you're not satisfied by encouraging people in fruitive activities? Hint. That was the problem. Because while compiling the Vedas, there's information of how one can... You heard the word dovetail before? Dovetail? Within Krishna consciousness, there's this term. Within carpentry, I learned this from a carpenter. There's a carpentry term called dovetail. Anybody know that one? When you join two pieces of wood, yeah? It's like, you know, with the little wedges, and put the wedges with the wedges, and it can make that piece of, those two pieces of wood even stronger than one piece of wood. Very strong. That's dovetail. You go like this piece and that piece, and they go together. So, how Prabhupada used the dovetail is, I have my material desire over here, and then there's Krishna service over here, but look, something that I like to do matches up with Krishna service, and so you dovetail. What you like to do, it's for Krishna. But, you know, so much for me, so much for Krishna. It's like two pockets instead of one. So much for me pocket and so much for Krishna pocket. And I'm counting how much is over here in this pocket along with, you know, faith in Krishna. So Narada said, you've given the Vedic codes for taking material desires and elevating those spiritual desires to the platform of religious practice, but too much of that, and not enough of explaining what's beyond, who is really to be satisfied by Vedic sacrifices. It's not just to fill some desire. I want fame, or I want health, or I want my business venture to be successful, or various yajnas for various purposes. The dovetail program. Vyas was instructed by Narada that you should compose one literature that just describes the higher purpose only. Dharma Prokita Kaitavotra. Paramo Nirmatsaram Satam. This is the first line of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. Any other form of dharma is eliminated. In fact, it's not given a complimentary term. It's called kaitava, or cheating. Those are contradictory terms. Cheating religion. Religion doesn't cheat. Religion elevates. But if the ultimate purpose of the soul, if the destiny of the soul to attain the lotus feet of Krishna in the spiritual world and his eternal service, if that's taken away, that's cheating. If one is deprived of that special privilege. So following Narada's instructions, Vyas compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. He sat in trance, not just meditation, but in trance. He had a vision while in trance, and he was instructed that vision should be your composition of Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's what he did. And that's one of the reasons why we should read Srimad Bhagavatam along with reading Bhagavad Gita. Probably most of you, if not all of you, have Bhagavad Gita in your home. If you don't, please take a Bhagavad Gita home with you and read it regularly. But a wonderful companion literature with Bhagavad Gita is Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it takes that message of Bhagavad Gita, the concluding message of Bhagavad Gita, and carries it into the realm of pure devotional service. I'll give an example, and then I'll end this discussion. The format of the Bhagavatam is questions and answers. And there's a whole series of different questions, persons asking questions. The primary person is Maharaj Parikshit, who's about to die, and because he's cursed to die by a Brahmin. In 7 days he's going to die. He knows it. He accepts it. He prepares himself for death, and Shukadeva Goswami comes, and he begins asking him questions. But that doesn't happen until the end of the first canto, in the beginning of the second canto, before Shukadeva Goswami even speaks. So the first canto is also questions and answers. It's someone who was in the audience. Sutta Goswami was in the audience, and he heard Shukadeva Goswami speaking. And after hearing him speak Srimad Bhagavatam, he assimilated it completely. And then some other sages, they wanted to hear Sutta speak Srimad Bhagavatam that he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. So that's what the first canto is, in the form of questions and answers. And one of the, we'll go over the first question. There's six principal questions that are at the very beginning. I'm going to speak about one of them. To give you a sampling of this wonderful, beautiful Srimad Bhagavatam. The sages say that this age of Kali is very bad. When you hear the word manda, it means bad. I'll recite the verse. prayinau payushak shabya, kalavit asman yudejana, manda sumanda matayo, manda bhagya yupandrita. So when you hear manda, dad, how many times you say it's dad? People, prayinau payushak shabya, people in this age of Kali, they've practically lost all good quality compared to previous ages. And they're lazy. They're misguided. So if someone thinks, oh, I think I'll learn about spiritual life. Maybe later. Lazy. But someone says, no, let's learn about spiritual life. Now where do you go to learn spiritual life? There's so many misleading persons ready to take you into the ditch or into a dark alley or the wrong direction. It's common in the age of Kali. And their duration of life is shortened. Their memory is shortened. Their good qualities are diminished. And above all, the mind is always disturbed, if you haven't noticed. The mind is always disturbed in this age of Kali. To have a peaceful mind is very rare to find in the age of Kali. So because of these manda, these bad characteristics of the age of Kali, the sages say, people aren't going to take the trouble to read the whole of the Vedas, or to seek to understand the Vedas. Could you do this favor? Could you summarize in a very short statement what the essence of all the Vedas? Please. Very good question. And the answer is a very good answer, given by Sutta Goswami, based on what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayogataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Shayadahai Sikham. That was the answer. The Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga, devotional service performed unto Vasudeva. Who is Vasudeva? Krishna. Vasudeva is the son of Vasudeva. And Vasudeva is Krishna's father, and Devaki is Krishna's mother. Vasudeva is their son, or Devaki Nandana. Vasudeva, that's Krishna. Devotional service unto Krishna is the essence. And when that devotional service is rendered automatically, knowledge and detachment arise from the heart. Janayata Ashu Vairagyam. Vairagya? Vairagya means detachment or renunciation. Like a Vairagi. Vairagya. Detachment. And Jnanam Cha. Knowledge also awakens from within the heart. Yad Ahaitukam. Ahaitukam means causelessly. You don't need to do something separately. Just hear this message of Srimad Bhagavatam and attraction for Krishna awakens. Causelessly, the nature of knowledge that's within the heart becomes restored, and detachment from the worldly distractions of life becomes yours. Very nice. In other words, transcendental knowledge is very, very different than your schoolwork. Because in schoolwork, it's something that's out there you have to bring in here. Let's say algebra. Have you taken algebra yet? No. What level of math have you taken? You've taken algebra. Okay. It's a system of mathematics. that's abstract, although it's a building block for higher math. So it's something that's out there, and you have to, like, you know, import it and bring it in here. And you can use it, something like a software on a computer. But knowledge that comes from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is knowledge that we already have. It's already there within us, and it becomes awakened. When Srila Prabhupada visited New York for the first time, and it was beginning the Hare Krishna movement, it's a quick story. You may have seen that picture where Prabhupada is standing by the very large oak tree in Tompkins Square Park, and standing very straight and tall and looking very serious at the audience. It was the very first day they went and performed Harinam publicly. So someone took a picture because it was a scene. Prabhupada came with all these devotees and had kirtan for 2 hours in the park. I hadn't seen anything like that before in New York. Hundreds of people were gathered around. And after 2 hours of kirtan, the kirtan stopped and Prabhupada stood up. And people were wondering, what's this man from Mars going to say? What language is he going to speak? Who knows? Here's what Prabhupada said. I have not come to teach you something new. I've come to remind you of that which you have forgotten. Wow. It's the same message that I just said. Transcendental knowledge is already there within the heart. It's of the soul proper. It's just covered. Like a match. You can have a match in a matchbox, and it can sit there for a long time. Just sit there and sit there for hundreds of years. But if you take match out of the matchbox and strike it on the striker, what happens? Fire comes out because it's stored. It's phosphorus and other chemicals that ignite at a lower temperature, and then, but it's stored fire. From Vedic perspective, fire is there, like fire is there in this wood. The process of photosynthesis takes the fire of the sun and transforms it into wood. There's stored fire right here. But don't worry, nothing will happen unless you bring another fire, and then that stored fire comes out. That's how it works, from a Vedic perspective. Similarly, knowledge of our relationship with God, or love of God, Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Sadhya Kavunar, Krishna Prema is already in the heart of every living being. Every living being. Somebody was, I won't give the name, somebody here while I was sitting in Guyana was appreciating how people with Indian background, how they can take the Krishna consciousness. It's very easy to understand that. But how someone from America, or a white body, or black body, or purple body, or pink body, or, you know, all the different other kinds of bodies, how they, not having had exposure to Krishna consciousness from their culture, how they can take it up and just dedicate their life to it. But my answer, my response to this person was, it's not at all surprising because it's of the soul. You take the match and move it against the striker, what happens? Fire comes out. Doesn't matter what the box looks like. Fire is there. It's attraction for Krishna is there. I recently visited China. Hey, don't tell anybody, but, you know, Chinese people are spirit souls too. They have attraction for Krishna. You can tell other people, it's okay. They have attraction for Krishna. And by chanting Hare Krishna, their love for Krishna grows. The cleansing of the same things happens regardless of this color body, that color body, or this nationality, that nationality, or where you were born, or what language you speak, or what your culture, or anything. It has nothing to do with those things. It's all at the platform of the soul. And so by regularly hearing Shinvata, Sakata, Krishna, Punya, Shravana, Kirtana, Hridyantakso, Abhadrani. The Hrid, the heart, becomes cleansed of all Abhadras. Abhadra means inauspicious. Bhadra is auspicious. Then there's Subhadra. He's very auspicious. And then there's the opposite, Abhadra. That's what hearts of materialistic persons are filled with. So when the heart is cleansed of all Abhadras just by hearing Krishna Katha, nice kirtan. You're very blessed here to have such nice kirtan singers. Take part in the kirtan. Your worries just go somewhere else. Or you hear Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully in your home. You can have kirtan in your home too. You don't have to only have kirtan here. And read Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and experience the cleansing of the heart. Sarvatma snaparam. So, I'm encouraging you to appreciate Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. They're very rich in spiritual potency. It doesn't take academic skill, it takes a simple heart to appreciate the message. And when one approaches the message with a simple heart, eager to receive mercy from Krishna, everything that you need, all the direction and indications that you need to make your way back to Godhead are already there. They're embedded. The potencies are there and the instructions are there. Combined with the chanting of the holy name, it's a perfect package. To carry the conditioned soul back to Godhead. Arati is supposed to start in 5 minutes. Any questions? Yeah. I recall when I was growing up in a Christian family, reading a passage from the New Testament in which Christ said, "So much more I have to tell, but you cannot bear to hear." He said, "I am telling you of worldly things, and you cannot receive them. What to speak of otherworldly things?" The audience had limits. So a major part of his teaching was morality. You know, thou shalt, like the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal. And setting a proper example. And dealing with the Sadducees and the Pharisees that were, you know, saw him as a big threat because he was too popular. So, you know, issues about, you know, which is the proper, when someone, you know the gold coin story? Okay, there's a story where one of the 12 major disciples of Christ was Peter. And Peter's occupation was he was a fisherman. That was one of his chief disciples. So one day, Peter was fishing. He brought in his net, and when he cut open the fish to bring the fish to the marketplace, he found inside the fish a gold coin. So there was this big to-do. A tax collector from the king came and confronted Peter and said, "Who does this gold coin belong to?" Christ was standing there. You know, the way to get Christ, because if he gave the wrong answer, he'd be put in jail. So, does it belong to the king, or does it belong to God. And he said he didn't know. So then he turned to Christ and said, who does the gold coin belong to? And Christ said, render unto God what is God's, and render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. That was his answer. Then later, Peter gave the gold coin to the tax collector. So, those are the circumstances that he was dealing with. To hear higher subject matters, or, you know, even definitions of what is the soul distinct from the body. Well, any speaker has to judge their, you know, have a sense of the audience, and you speak according to the audience. And that's what he did. Time, in says, Desha Kala Patra, time, place, and circumstance. So Christ was judging the time, place, and circumstance, and he spoke according to the audience. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, looks like we're finished. Okay, now it's just at the right time, aren't you, Ken? To the Prabhupada ki, Sri Sri Gaura Thai ki, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki,